operational here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be meeting with you, Peter, in this kind of a context. So perhaps we could start by my asking you to give your name for the purposes of the recording.
Okay, Peter Patrick Stevenson.
And then describe, I guess in your case, you didn't work in the grain industry through your whole life. So maybe what we should do instead is, I might ask you when you first did work that related to grain industry in the city.
A year and a half from 1947 to 48, in full 47 and 48 completed, a year and a half in the two years.
And within 47 and 48.
Yeah.
Now you've indicated that your birth date was 1931. So you were about 16 or 17 with this.
Yeah.
So this was one of perhaps your first job then, in fact, was it?
Well, no, I worked a year at Norton Wood before that.
Okay.
At 16.
Right. In the Depression circumstances, you were out there
earning
some money. Well, by that time, it's after the war, I guess.
But, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Had anyone in your family been connected with the grain industry earlier?
No.
Your father hadn't or anything of that sort. So we have that particular year, and you might then tell us, who did you work for during this time?
In this
47-48 period.
Okay, I worked. Got a job with Day Company of Canada, giant sheet metal company, and they had the contract to do the elevators, put the dust control. And they really, when I came, they started a couple years already, they've been in it, but they wanted to finish it up a little more, so they brought in a lot of crew helpers, and with the sheet metal men, I was their helper, and we always had 6-7 men in this elevator, so much in this and so much, and almost going the odd elevator, then sometimes send a big group to do this elevator from top to bottom, because it's been laid back last or so,
sure.
You know.
So if this was happening in 1947, and you said a year or two earlier, the big explosion was in August of 1945.
I think that's pretty close.
And I suppose that's what got the elevator companies realizing that they needed to do something to clean up their terminals.
Yeah.
Do you remember the explosion? Were you anywhere around?
No, but my next door neighbor on Alexander Street, Fort William, worked there. He worked for the grain door division, which was for big crews. Remember, the old boxcars had the grain doors inside to keep the pressure and
right.
That. And he went to the hotel up the hill and for a beer and overstayed his time in the hotel. When he came back, that the elevator had already blown up that section. So he said, lucky I was in that beer parlor, because I wouldn't have been around.
So it could have killed him. The way
that's what he said.
Yeah. Well, there are many reasons to be thankful for another beer, but it's hard to top that one.
Yeah.
And so with this experience, in any case, you were then hired by the Day Company, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. They needed young guys for... I wanted to learn a trade.
Yes.
And sheet metal, well, it was more available with them guys with so much young guys working.
Sure.
You could get in. I got in with, through some friends that spoke up for me. And so you were a helper and... originally, you was at the shop for about a month and a half or two, soldering and helping the sheet metal, holding the pipes and what have you. And then gradually you get sent to the elevators to work. And it was, the elevators to work there was Siberia when you went in the fall, because it is the most coldest place to work in. The windows are all open. After that, they were all open in order to keep the draft going, you know. But you had to have all the clothes you own on to survive. It was terrible time.
And you were working through the winter of 47, 48.
Yeah.
And did they do more of the work in the elevators after the end of the shipping season then, which would...
All through, like, it goes on doesn't affect them whether it's shipping season or not.
They were at work getting this stuff in.
Yeah. The grain seemed, a lot of it would come here. Some of it was cleaned here or whatever, and then boxcars.
You could shut that.
Wait for your cue, Ernie.
Yes, sir. You were just saying about the grain coming into the elevators.
That's when, the railway tracks and that, everything was manual labor to unload the boxcars. Some of them had screens like, in the tracks, there was openings that the grain could go down.
Fell down into bins under the track, I see.
Well, under there, and the under belts would be taken to the workhouse, and then up.
Sure.
The workhouse to the top, then over to the bins.
Okay.
You know. Right. Because those days, the bin was from the floor up, it was almost 100 feet. And it could, the old style wooden boxcars, it could hold 40 boxcars.
These are the big concrete silos that you're describing, these round bins at the terminals. But, 40 boxcars.
Yeah. And underneath the silo, of course, was coned.
Yes.
And when they were needed to load a ship, it all went, the guy with the screw opens and the hatch. The wheat goes down the belt, down the conveyor, up again to the waystaff,
right,
and samplers and that, and then over and into the spout, into the hull of the ship.
Right.
And dust, because of all that traffic of movement of grain.
And now that's a very useful description of how the grain actually moved from the boxcar into the...
Yeah,
silos into the bins and then back out and so on. And you were just referring to all the dust that blew around. What were you actually doing then? What did the dust control equipment, the installations that you were carrying out, actually involve or do to this?
Well, they were trying to keep the air clean, because for me to that refrigerator sometimes... When they're working, loading a ship and all the machinery is working to take the grain and up and the whole thing, you could just see a silhouette of that person.
At 3 or 4 meters. At 3 or 4 meters, let's say, or
a
dozen feet.
It was so bad, the dust, you know. So gradually as more, we called them cyclones, they had them up on the building and sucked the dust up as... And then the heavier stuff went down in a cycle in a pipe, and it would be gone to another bin, and it was sold for chicken mash.
Right. Oh, yes.
You know, as a byproduct.
Sure.
But it did tone down the dust
control,
because you were just covered with dust. And the odd time you put a hanky over your face, because no breathers were available.
Yeah, no masks.
No.
That were available at the time. So you were involved then in the installation of these huge vacuum cleaners, I suppose, in a sense, or vacuum extractors. And the piping that you were putting in, the sheet metal, was what, around the vacuums and in the pipes up?
The pipes are all over the place. Some of them to have movement, they had slip joints where you can pull it to the here and suck up. Right. And we'll go here and suck up the dust. The other thing was, for us, you had to go crawl in the beams,
right?
There and all the ironwork to put the pipe through. And the dust on there, my God, if the guy's working on top over there and he brushes his foot or something, all that stuff comes down on you, you know.
It was just piled up on every level surface, I suppose.
And cold, very cold, you know, and in the draft.
Sure.
And dangerous. It was quite dangerous. I mean, three times I was this close to being killed.
In what ways?
Well, one of the times, the elevators that hoisted you, they were manual,
right.
Big rope. And so what happened used to be the guys would pull it and kind of slow down, and you open your door and jump into the elevator and
totally
keep
good.
On going. This was all boo, 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 you know. And so this time we were going from way up down. So the elevator came and I was to jump in with the rest of the guys, but they felt I wasn't going to make it, so they're pulling me back. But the guys in the elevator are pulling me in to get... So the elevator, they managed to stop it right here, and I was laying across from the floor and part into the elevator.
Could have just chopped you in two, or
that's what
grave
it was,
damage.
Crushed me to that.
I see.
That was one. And so another one I was to fall off, holding this piping and that, and the guy is riveting it, and ready to fall off onto the belt. Well, the belt is going, well, crips, you know. If I get caught in one of the downspouts, well, you know, the belt would wear down, and I'd have to either try to fall off or somebody yank me off the belt, you know.
Yeah.
So that was, but somehow we got used to that, and really...
People do.
You know, get shook up for a minute or two, but... After that, well, just one of those things. Yeah. It's later in life. When I got older, I thought, oh, my God.
But it didn't encourage you to think about a lifetime in the elevators, I
know. No. With the allergy and the stuff I had, and in working that kind of environment, no.
Cool.
You know, I didn't quit. I got laid off, a group of us, once they caught up. But I got in for a while working with a guy to put furnaces in sheet metal part of it, you know.
Sure.
And that was a lot better, but...
In the elevators as well?
No, no.
Oh, this was it. So another, you continued with the company?
Yeah.
And,
another company, a small sheet metal office in town, you know.
With a sheet metal worker.
The company was good in one way. It's like, once you were working there, you worked 8 hours. Where in the sheet metal shop, you only worked when you got a customer to buy a furnace, so you could hang around the office for 2 or 3 or 4 hours. If there's no work, you don't get paid.
Only if there's work being done.
A small sheet metal office couldn't afford to pay you all day, you know. You hung around to hopefully call come in, and then the sheet metal guy and me, the helper, go down and...
You
know. Back to the grain trades, the thing too I noticed was that was one hell of a lot of men, like each one.
In each elevator.
Each elevator.
Yes.
And then come the grain trimmers, and comes the government,
the inspectors,
staff men, and the weighmen, you know. Right. And everyone had their kind of perks or positions and that.
Right.
And it was a job that employed a lot of people.
Yes.
And a lot of them worked for many years there. Like it wasn't a place where, well, you're going to get laid off in 6 months or what have you. Except some in the winter months, some of them did... tone down the crew, shorten, you know, because there was just strictly now carloads coming in, carloads going out, rather before, when we're shipping, of course, carloads are coming in and loading the bins, so the ship, you know, the ship is one come in and 2 or 3 days later another one comes in at your elevator and so on and so on, you know.
Were you a member of the union during this
time? Yeah. And that was a, one of the good things about it was that, you know, the guy Carl Schoen has said, there's going to be a night school course at, and that was then the Fort William Vocational, for sheet metal. And I says, well, what do I have to do? He says, well, you go down there and sign yourself in, because you got to take sheet metal drafting, how to make patterns, stuff, and that. Well, I didn't really want to do that. He says, well, if you want to work with us, you're going to school.
Sure.
So there was four or five of us guys. The union's telling you, you're going to school.
Yeah. Well, this would be in the best traditions of the old craft union.
That's what it was.
A skilled trade was what the workers were.
Yeah, and the point is, if you're going to work with us, you got to start learning skills.
Yes.
And you learn like, and I figured, well, I guess I have to, because that's how he did it.
Sure.
And you know, so he's passed, well, the night school guys were, you know, senior guys at sheet metal, and show you the tricks of a lot of techniques and that, which was not, you know, there was a lot to learn.
Did you work as a sheet metal worker for a while then? Just to jump ahead, then we'll come back to the elevators again.
Yeah. I worked at day company for a month and a half, then sent to the elevator.
Right. Still working for the day company, though.
Day company. Jeez.
Learn.
Okay. There we go. She should have spent more time in caucus.
Okay.
So you were saying that in terms of working as a sheet metal worker, you were working at the day company headquarters, I guess, or at their plant first, and then off to the elevators.
Yeah, to working with the guys there,
yes,
that are from the day company,
right.
And some of them have been there months, you know, so
sure.
They're sending new guys to helpers, and
were these men coming in from Toronto or wherever? Some of these,
No. The guys that were here had been already, that I remember, had been a year or two before I came, so it was good, steady job.
Yeah,
so
they were Lakehead men,
yeah,
who had these jobs.
Yeah, some were brought in some from somewhere else, but very few. And the other thing, once they got with this elevator stuff, you have to, I guess, give credit to C.D. Howe, because his firm, engineering firm, organized to get this air dust control,
sure,
done. So guys were sent from here, some the veterans, to Alberta, to elevators there, to Saskatchewan, Manitoba. And
did you have any sense that there was government money supporting this this work?
Well, I think so, because C.D. Howe then was the minister of
probably trade and commerce.
Yeah.
He's also Minister of Defense Production, I know, in there. There was this joking about Minister of Everything.
He was here, Mr. Everything.
Yeah. And, of course, Member of Parliament for Port Arthur. So.
From 1935 to
1957.
To Doug Fisher beat him. Yeah.
The reason I'm asking is that I was chatting this morning with someone who was involved with some similar work in the mid-70s, or late 70s, and he suggested that a substantial amount of money had been given to the elevator companies for further, I guess, maybe the dust control and so on, and probably upgrading that may have well have displaced workers as well, although he didn't say that in so
yeah.
many words. But so that made me wonder if that happened in the 70s, whether back in 47, 48, there was any public money in there.
I think so, because if you remember, you'll see cement floors outside of the elevators, back of the elevator or so, and they built big wooden structures to store wheat in there.
Annexes.
Richardson Elevator and Current River, and those, they had them out back of it. And part of it was for the war effort, as I was told, in case a disaster happened, they wanted particular central, where we were in North America, that the German planes wouldn't reach us this far. That was the other thing, consideration.
Sure.
Keep the odd ones on the coast, but you want everything inland.
Right. You know? In safety.
And so, they built those with thick walls of wood, BC fir lumber, and I'm sure the government put that all out because the elevators wouldn't have done that, you know.
There's a lot of annex building on the prairies.
Yeah.
In these years as well, I think there's more grain being grown, I suppose, and rather than adding to the size of the elevator itself or building more, they just added these annexes. That may have had something to do with the difficulties of selling all the stuff in the 1950s, though, I think on the prairies, which gets us in another story we'd better not try telling here. Yeah. I was asking you whether you'd continue to work as a sheet metal worker for some time then after this work was done.
I was about a couple of months working for this guy where you come there, and if there's work, you stayed. If there wasn't, you hung around. And I got tired of that. And that's when I went in the summer of 1950 to Vulcan Machinery.
So you started with Vulcan in 1950 already?
It was then called Twin City Industrial.
Okay.
And there was the International Harvester dealership.
Okay.
They had opened in 47. And I came in 1950 and I was there 40 years with that. But that was at least steady more, like the day company now had caught, found pretty well tied up all the elevators.
Sure.
And from then on, Northland Machinery was a company over by where the Italian Hall, Da Vinci's Hall is further down. The guy was quite famous here. He donated a lot of money for scholarships, passed away. He was not quite to the Patterson level, but he was...
Andrews?
John Andrews?
John Andrews.
Oh, yes, all the Andrews Foundation, and the Thunder Bay Foundation, I think, in fact, is where his money went.
So they took up the slack. In fact, they worked at times when we were there, and then they kind of, after a while, when Day Company kind of moved to big jobs west and east and takes some of the crew with them there, they kind of pick up the scraps here and plug along.
Work in the elevators.
Yeah.
Not necessarily this dust control work, but other work as well.
Whatever, you know, there was kind of like, they had a lot of what you call black iron work, and that is the big heavy spouts and rivets on the side.
Yeah.
And before that, if you know, on Fort William Road, there's... the bus depot there.
The intercity area near the bus garage?
Yeah, next there was Home Sheet Metal. Now, they were the pioneer of the sheet metal stuff. And the journeyman that I was helper, he was 54, which to me at 17, 18, it was an old man. But he worked as a young man for Home Sheet Metal there. And he told me, why'd they put it on the Fort William Road like that, you know? He says, well, the elevators were over there, and he says, we would make the spouts, and by team horses, wheel them through the field there and over the railway tracks to the elevators to put all those big spouts and all that, and that was all manual work. So that was back, I guess, in the 30s. When this was happening.
With the elevators being added, or even earlier.
Yeah.
Yes, I dare say.
Or earlier, you know.
Yeah, I don't suppose anyone connected with that business is alive by now. I mean, this Home Sheet Metal, the people connected with that will long since be gone.
Jack was 54 and I was 17, 18, you know.
54 and 40s, 18, 90. Really, 93 or something like that, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be 117 by now if he were still with us.
He was he was the best guy I worked for. He was patient with me, and took me over as a grandson type of deal, you know. Sure. That was good. The other guys were, it was like a football team. You toe the mark or get out type of mentality or something.
And did you work for this, what did you say the man's name was?
Jack.
Should really memorialize him in this recording if we could.
I think it was Jack Weeks, and Weeks had a store at Kekabeka, the old days of corner farmer's store, and he was part of the family.
Sure.
You know.
Well, we could track him down in the old city directories, for that matter, to find the Jack Weeks and confirm that he was a soft and a sheet metal worker. But and you worked with him quite a bit on this.
I worked with him 5-6 a little more, probably almost a year.
More than half the time you spent at the elevators was with him. Well, that's good. Do you have memories of any of the specific elevators, better, worse, more difficult, easy?
Yeah. The elevators in Westfort were very rough, scrubbing.
Oh, you're a young man.
Thanks, Ernie. Ready?
Okay.
So you were saying about the Westfort elevators, the one that's along the Kaministiquia River, I guess.
Yeah. Reliance elevator was one I found very, very poorly made, old everything in it, and not safe, you know, type of. There was two elevators right by Great Lakes Paper Mill, right in the turning basin, small capacity ones.
Do you remember the names of those two elevators?
One was Northwestern. Okay. The other one, I thought it was Thunder Bay Terminals or something, but I'm not sure.
So they were still there in 48.
Because
other people I've mentioned them to, and they don't remember that, but there's a picture at the archives, the city archives, that shows those elevators on it. So I actually drove down one day to satisfy myself that the stuff was there. And, of course, the concrete foundations are still there for those elevators.
Then Patterson's elevator was by the swing bridge.
Right.
It was good elevator to a point, but, you know, concrete in an elevator, there's concrete and there's concrete. Theirs was not that good, meaning, like, we would, with these drill punches, you know, we're putting bolts in to the holes into the wall to put bolts in anchored because we're brackets.
Sure.
Because there's pipes outside the building going up.
Right.
And, well, it was working. You make that hole, this hole, and you got to bang on the hard concrete a lot. But at theirs, you take it and half the amount of belting, and it would go through. You know, so we like that.
Holes more than an inch in diameter.
Yeah.
Basically, with a punch, you were driving
a star drill. We call them.
Star drill.
It was all manual. So you bang, bang, and turn it, and bang, bang, and you know. So they had that.
They had silly putty rather than concrete. Eh?
Yeah. But otherwise, it wasn't a bad elevator. You know, they kept it, and they had a lot of the dust control already in, so it was working. So it wasn't so dirty to work there.
But that's interesting. So the Patterson's, I'm not sure when it was built. I know it was taken down in 1978, the year I came to town. I came by to see it being knocked down. But whenever it was built, it was obviously done by a poorer contractor than the other elevator.
Yeah. That's the one we noticed was the...
Sure. Well, that's one way of measuring it.
The other ones, Grand Trunk we worked in, and Searle elevator beside it. Grand Trunk was very poorly made, the elevator, and it had, like most elevators you have, the top of the bin is concrete floor, and you got a hatch there to
the top is flat, is it?
Yeah.
And then
you got your house.
Your workhouse over that.
The canopy type, because you walk all the bins from one end to the other, and the belting there and that.
Yeah.
The only one that had exposed elevators and you walked on catwalks was Grand Trunk there where Cargill is now. So the bins are open, and some of them, when they're empty, you look 100 feet down, it's dark. It's sort of creepy, spooky, you know.
Were there barriers on the catwalks at
yeah,
the top?
Yeah, you had the catwalks and walk.
Nice, you, sturdy things you could lean
yeah,
against?
Yeah, there was, you know, iron.
Yeah.
And the only thing, when they start to work and fill up or taking grain out, you almost figure you're going to blow the ceiling off above you because of the opening of this. You know, you pushing, say, grain down to the bin down there, and it's, say, almost empty, so the grain is going down 100 feet from the top belt.
Yeah.
And kaboom, you know, it was... The other thing there was an experience that frightened us. That it was spring. The tugs were bringing in a boat, and Cargill, you come in by the Abitibi Mill there, and you kind of got to turn there and go past Searle here and tuck into here. Well, the tugs were with the ship trying to get it docked, and they hit the dock. And we were up and working up there, and just suddenly, you know, a jolt, like a serious one.
You could
one.
Feel it at the top of the silos.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the ice jamming, you know, it was spring. And what happens to you when that happens is your legs freeze and like cramps almost. I was holding something for this fella. And all of a sudden, I froze in the legs here. That from that, that was for us all frightening, that experience, because that was a real like an earthquake type sure. of thing, because it was an old junky elevator too. You know, everything was old. It was a lot of corrugated iron on the workhouse, very, you know, tin shack like.
Yeah,
basically. So I noticed when I've gone with my boat in the past years. Cargill did put a lot of money in it and did fix a lot of it compared to what I remembered.
Yes.
Searle next door was a kind of a fancy one with a brick and that.
Yeah.
And we had a guy, Irvin's, the Irvin family of Fort William. The one of them was the superintendent of the elevator. Yours to use but not to abuse. Watch your step. Do not abuse this or that. And he was safety nut, and that was good. If something happened with the machinery or anything or an accident or almost an accident, you shut the elevator down, all trades, everybody's got to go to this big meeting hall. All right, what happened? And what can we do about it? The whole nine yards. We don't want anybody killed here.
No.
He was that kind of guy. And once, 3 weeks or a month, you'd have that call that everybody has to drop their tools and be down there to the meeting, because he was there
sure.
wanting to get to the bottom of this, you know. So he was sort of like the sergeant, but that was okay. You know, he was the... people thought he overdone it that. Well, maybe so, but his elevator, nobody got killed. And then some of these other elevators, you do have a half-mast flag that somebody was killed there, you know.
Is there any other manager you remember from this work? So we have heard of Mr. Irwin before with appreciation. So you're confirming something we were told just a week ago by D.B. Cook.
Well, the others, you kind of, they were nameless and you never, you know, they were... the tradesman that you didn't even know the guy's name, and he was never around to check.
No.
He had his lieutenants come around and do the grunt work for them that way. And so you didn't know their name even.
No.
You know.
Did you work on other elevators? Because I'm getting this picture from Patterson and the...
Well, the Grand Trunk worked there for a month or two.
Sure.
And then Searle a week or two next
right.
door.
Yes.
And Pool 7.
So you were in the inner city area.
Yeah,
right?
Pool 7, a couple of months. And Richardson was the one I worked the longest. Well, when I went first there, put almost a half a winter there.
Well, you started at Richardson.
Yeah, from the shop.
Big, the one on the north end
yeah.
of the waterfront.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a pretty good elevator in construction, and it was taken care of pretty good. There was always maintenance men working the grounds. And Irvin was somewhat that way. He had kind of Westfort a camaraderie with labor people that... We'll fit you in some way. If you can't do the hard stuff, we'll find a spot for you.
Yeah. Did you know anything more about Mr. Irwin at the Searle elevator?
No. One funny incident happened. The elevator guys, some of them work. They sometimes have nothing to do, so they're bugging around. And sometimes what happens was there's a floor over there. This is open, say, 20 feet or so, but there's a half floor over here and a railing there. So this guy, the sheet metal or the elevator guy, sometimes bored and they kind of bugger up your jobs. You're up there and he's yanking at your foot or something, or, you know. So this time, this guy, you walk and the guy, you're standing on the floor and the railing, and now the floor, the next layer is down there open right up. So he goes and starts to pee, and old man Irvin, somebody else comes, and they turn around.
Caught it full in the face, did he?
Yeah. And that guy, and he took off to the corner and sweeping floors and everything, but we told him that we were going to tell him, because he used to bugger hide our tools and stuff like that, and now we had him, because old Irving was, you know, he did it, we saw it, you know, and that's what he was, I told him we were going to tell him. Well, from then on, he never hit our tools or bug around with us. In fact, we'd say, go down and buy some pop for us. He did it. But old Irvin, I'm sure there would have been a firing squad.
Well, there's occasions at which blackmail can be very useful.
That was oh God, we, and there was about three or four of us that saw it all, you know. Jesus.
Well, enough witnesses for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you were saying you'd worked at the Richardsons as well. You were saying something about the grounds. And
yeah, they were had lawns thing done and everything. The downside for them was, that I remember then, the dredge would come to try to scrape the water line, 27 feet you got to be.
Oh, for the ships coming in.
Yeah, because right. The ship, when they loaded, they're usually 26 feet.
Sure.
You know. And then again, the grain trimmers have to make sure.
Yeah, that the ship loads evenly.
That she's level, because either the back is going to drag sure. on the ground or the front. And that elevator was on rock, because you watch the bucket come out of the water, and a piece of shale, and that's all. No, you know, it was all clawing away. Yeah. You're chipping away at rock, sort of
sure.
thing. But they clean it up best, the silt and everything,
yeah.
and to keep that depth,
yeah.
you know. And there was, the piers and everything were pretty solid. They had sheet pilings underneath. That was good, because a lot of the other old elevators just had the pilings and then this concrete dock. And, you know, if the water goes down a foot or so level in the lake, well, then it exposes the wood. And the wood gets air,
sure.
and they're rotting.
Yeah,
and you've got this ton of bloody concrete on top. It was not safe.
Was that the reason why one of the elevators slid into the bay?
Grain growers, yeah. Yeah, well, their part was the pilings, yeah. They weakened, and so when she fell, of course, she fell at the shipyards, and they had that corrugated shop there, and the wave was so high that it blew the tin off it and everything, from, well, say, a distance about a block, I guess, from Green Growers to the shipyards. So it did some damage there.
This was actually near Port Arthur Shipyard, shipbuilding, was it?
Eh?
When you say shipyards, you mean the Port Arthur?
Yeah.
A port ship.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was remembering, and yet Mr. Cook last week was suggesting another location altogether.
I think you've been vindicated.
Okay, it was near Port Ship.
We're also talking about Ogilvie's, which is earlier.
Which, of course, is way over
on Cam River.
On the Cam River.
At the mouth of the McKellar coming in.
Yeah.
Well, that elevator, if you look in the history of it, it did fall over. It flopped into the water and back, I think, in the 20s or maybe earlier. Because I saw a picture in the newspaper of history of the past, and part of it fell.
Yes.
But grain growers, that was real. And yet, I got into a little bit of diving, then scuba diving. That was new around here, and we had a gang, and we tried to go around these elevators. And
did you know? exploring.
The guy that had a bit of a, well, he was knew more about it, and he had some underground hard hat diver outfit and everything. And the sheet piling was on the dock where the elevator went over. Well, then that sheet piling bent as the elevator fell in. Well, now they had to bust all that concrete and get that out, and the sheet piling is bent like that.
Sure.
And so they'd go down with torches and cut off at the bottom there and pull up that iron, that was grain growers.
And you observed some of this out scuba diving.
A little bit, that. But they didn't want us around, other words, you went there and looked around and beat it, because, they didn't want you around because of accidents.
Sure,
like that,
legal liability.
Yeah, and also a lot of the guys figured, well, if that's going to go, who's to say this section is going to go when I'm underneath?
that is a sobering thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing like standing at the top of a high-rise building and sort of imagining it falling over.
Yeah.
And make you feel a little uneasy in the tummy. But
yeah.
So those were the various elevators at which you worked then at 47, 48, the ones that you've mentioned, and you've described some differences amongst them. Are there other things? Other things you remember about these elevators?
The one we... Empire was right at the mouth of the Cam, and it was a lot of rope, pulleys, manual stuff, and actually Gordon Stenson's father, I had a talk with him one time when he was in the hospital, and he was the millwright chief there, and pipe fitter. And everything was, some of those elevators had their own boiler place, with the big stack and the whole thing. And Empire had all that, but it was a piece of junk. The whole workhouse was not cement. It was all iron, so with a tin, what's the word for the tin, corrugated iron.
Corrugated steel.
Screw onto it. There was
riveted to it or whatever. Okay. No, he worked in it. He had built it.
He was in charge of the maintenance of it. And he was telling me about all the pipe fitting and stuff they had to do. Because steam pipes and everything, that was a lot of work for a lot of them. Because some of the newer elevators were more involved with the electricity.
Yeah.
But some of these had steam motor to generate electricity or to provide heat and power, so it was pretty crude stuff.
Yes.
And empire was that way.
It would be one of the that first generation or whatever of elevators, I suppose.
Yeah.
Were the others that you worked in pretty well the same in regard to equipment? I suppose they were all electric, by electric motors in.
Yeah.
In the various elevators.
Yeah. Well, Empire wasn't much. I could never understand where all these big ropes going and that thick and pulleys up there and pulleys down below.
Sure.
I didn't understand what that was really to do.
Well, it may have been if they had a central steam engine somewhere or other. This was the drive, the power for the various
to run belts,
running the belts and all the rest of it. Because 140 years ago, the buffalo were decimated on the prairies, on the American plains, because buffalo hide made great belting. And before electricity really came in, was steam engines being used. They were making the buffalo leather, the bison hides, into belts for the factories and so on. So in this case, of course, the bison were gone, and so ropes had to serve the purpose of transmitting the power.
Yeah. You guys want a beer or don't?
I think we should probably carry on to see.
Okay.
Is there anything more about the grain trade that you've been involved with, Peter, after doing this work and snorkeling around, scuba diving around elevators and so on? Did you do any? Did Northland or Vulcan?
Well, Vulcan in the 1980s. Oh, sorry. Okay, in the 1980s, Vulcan. We had a big hydraulic shop, and we did a lot of hydraulic work in elevators, pull seven doors with hydraulic motors to pull the boxcars in and spot them. So the guy can, with his typewriter at the workhouse, their office, click on and hook up and move the cars and move them back, stuff like that.
So this would be one of the features of automation in the elevators that was coming in.
And that way it would cut men on the tracks and everything.
Sure.
And and it was, better, but it was a big job for us. All the piping and that had to be just like electrical wiring, but now you had hydraulic oil under pressure going to wherever to move a cylinder or a hydraulic motor,
Were you involved with the installation of any of this, or just mainly at the shop working?
Mainly at the shop, all on the shop.
Yeah.
Do we have guys in the field there working, putting it up, but
right.
we would make the stuff, or the engineer we had would buy the motors and that, and the guys would go out and install the stuff.
So you'd become a machinist by this time, I guess, hadn't you?
Well, I was kind of a lead hand, sort of called. You sort of was a foreman, and you made sure the work orders were done and everything, and here, go down to such and such elevator and put in the motor or something, I stayed mostly in the shop over that. And
so, you were mentioning the engineers. I guess we might go back to the 47-48 work. You mentioned that C.D. Howe was involved with that. He was a minister, so it's his company that had the C.D. Howe engineering, if you will. Had the job of supervising and drawing up the plans, I suppose, and all the rest of it.
They did a lot of that. Arnie Simonson, from our lodge, he was working for them, and into that kind of stuff in his younger days.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, but he's in tough shape. He had that stroke years ago. What else I can tell you? The only thing I sometimes rode with my boat and noticed how many elevators used to be, how many there are left.
Yeah.
You know, Cam River was the CPR elevator D. Later, by the CPR station was the other elevator, CPRs. And they weren't concrete, they were steel bins. Across the river from there, you look where that scrap yard is. As you went over the Jackknife Bridge, there was elevator there, but just a few bins were left. There was a big fire there years ago. The workhouse and everything was wooden, and I guess it caught fire there. And then around the corner, towards Patterson's, is the Reliance, was one of the Reliance, and the other one was Western Grain, I think it was. And then came Patterson's, and then came the two elevators at Great Lakes. Because that turning basin was man-made, that part there. Because the boats went up and turned themselves around. If the big ones had trouble, the tugs would pull them.
Sure.
That was all thanks to old man Patterson, Senator Patterson. He managed to have that Cam River dredged. That right. cost a fortune, I guess. You
I
know.
Suppose it did. And the turning basin or whatever near the cargo elevator as well.
Yeah.
It was cut out, wasn't it? Because when you fly in, if you fly in right over that area, you could see how squared out the riverbank is there. So it's clearly been cut out and dredged out in order to allow for it.
Yeah. And you know, when you're thinking about, you see the dock and 27 feet down below is the bottom. And it's standing on stilts with these pilings.
Yes.
You know, and... Right. The other thing was when Pool 4A, Pool 4B, the one that blew up next to Richardson, next was another elevator called, it was Pool 9, but I don't know, Sass Pool or Manitoba Pool. When I came first to Richardson, they said that a Barnum McQueen guys came lunch to Richardson's and they've been working on that in Pool 9. So, and they were mad and bitching, and what the hell's the matter? Well, they're down at the elevator bottom and they're drilling holes into the ground and into the pilings buried and putting cross braces all over.
Used to hold everything
up. You know, about a 2-inch to or an inch and a half or two of rods
steel
with threads rods. To bolt it, X-bracing. Because the elevator was sinking in the front, the whole thing. So I thought, it can be sinking. I was, you know, didn't know much, nothing from nothing. He says, kid, go up there in the workhouse there and take a look for yourself. So I went. Our elevator, the workhouse, just above the bins, and look at their bins. And sure enough, your eyesight, it was, I imagine, about 2 feet or
lower at one end?
One end lower, and you know, up to the workhouse, you know, where it's standing where it should be. But the funny thing was, and I told the other guy, it's true, the guys were saying, you know. But they closed that.
It would have been better to take it down by the sound of it, or burn it in the wintertime or whatever. I mean,
well, this one was all cement, though.
Yeah. Oh, it was cement.
I see. Yeah, it wasn't. But it the trouble was the foundation.
Yeah,
you
the
see.
Pilings.
Yeah, that's why next door was Grain Growers, and that's when it toppled over. It was because of the.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
I think Grain Growers didn't have the sheet piling early enough, and when a ship is going out, a lot of places they want to, well, the tug will take them out and get them to stay in the channel, but the captain don't want to use the tugs because it's X amount of dollars an hour, and that's
sure.
his bonus is just going out there,
so
he wants to take a ship out by himself.
So he starts backing it out with
so
the propellers reversed.
The prop is going to, what that's doing is washing the soil and everything from underneath the dock.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like some of those elevators didn't have the sheet piling or came later, but yeah. so you know.
The elevator companies discovered it would be a good idea to have sheet piling in place.
Well, grain growers found because that's how they bent there, but you imagine they should have done it years earlier.
Yeah, driven it right down to well into the dirt. Well, I guess I might ask, was there anything you'd like to add to what you've been saying in terms of what people might be interested in knowing? You've told us a lot of interesting things about the elevator. Some of it helps to be outside sometimes, just staring at the things.
Yeah, that was, you know, the year and a half, two that I was there, you know, it was kind of a blip in my working career.
You mentioned Barnett and McQueen, the fellows working on this elevator, trying to brace it. Did you run into people from that company very often, or from C.D. Howe for that matter?
Well, they were, Barnett and McQueen was kind of something like I'd say a super millwrights. They had a bit, I think, sheet metal guys. They had iron workers and that, and fixed docks, stuff like that. Something like Thunder Bay Harbor was, you know.
Sure.
And those days, mind you, they had a, you know, equipment was small. So equipment was, well, they were small companies, really. Machinery wasn't made when I came to Vulcan, and then later on we had the big backhoes. We had all the big machinery.
Sure.
You know, everything was just, you didn't have a bloody bicycle anymore. You had a bloody high-powered race car.
Something with that kind of thing.
And these companies, as they got up on their feet, they were starting to buy the cranes and everything.
Sure.
The first cranes we sold was a cable, Osiris Erie, they were called, cable.
Right.
And the guy, Emmanuel Lee, was pulling in all winches in here to push the bucket or pull the bucket and lift the boom and, you know, drop it into the river or water and scoop up the soil and lift it out.
All kind of mechanical rather than hydraulic.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And later on it becomes much more sophisticated once the hydraulics are put in.
Yeah.
So C.D. Howe, I guess, was a power, not just the man in politics, but his company as well in the local business. I suppose they got a lot of the business.
Oh, I think he had he had the power. Mm-hmm. The only thing I tried to find somebody, there was a draftsman worked for him, and I said, could you go to them and ask them, for God's sake, get some money.
So you were just saying about the draft, sorry.
The what?
You were saying something about someone at C.D. Howe, the draft.
Yeah, well, I felt the shipyards needed a longer dry dock. And, you know, I was a young guy, but I could see the ships were getting larger in the lake, and we were kids. We always went to the docks from Ogden School in the springtime and summer. We were interested in boats, you know, and some of the guys in the East End, around the corner of Welcome Islands, there's a ship coming in. And a ship is coming in every couple hours. The guy says, oh, that's the A.A. Hudson. It was a package freighter, older one, you know. Yeah. Green, I remember. Yeah. I says, how do you know, you know? He says, what do you mean? He says, I know that ship. So I waited, it was a half an hour before I made it from the Welcomes into the Cam River and to the freight sheds. It was a package freighter.
Yeah.
It was the A.A. Hudson. You know, that's how guys, so then I start to watch and try to learn what ships are going and the name of them and spot them from a distance, you know. So that was the game us guys had there.
Sure.
So it was.
And so you got a sense of the fact that the ships were growing.
Yeah.
Would it be particularly after the Seaway that?
Before the Seaway.
Even before, because C.D. Howe, of course, was defeated in 1957, but.
Way before that, yeah, because this was during the war.
Mm-hmm. You were observing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the James Whalen you see tied up there, she was our hero. She was the beast breaking ice in the Cam River. Yeah. And what we would do is the guys that lived there, we'd give a note to each other, and they'd give me a note that James Whalen's starting to break at the mouth of the Cam by Empire Elevator. So that meant we looked at each other that we take the afternoon off from school to sit on the freight ship to watch the Whalen break an ice. And the teacher found out about it. And so I said, Miss Monroe, you have to understand, it's hard on us fellas when the tug is out there breaking ice. It's happiness. I couldn't think of what else to say.
Is that what you said to the teacher? Did he smile?
It was a woman.
Oh, a woman.
Yeah. And later on, I met her at a funeral, you know, at Wesley. And it was one of the teachers of her peers at the time. She was 95. Her name was Hazelton. And I said, you remember us guys, those days? She says, yeah, I remember you guys, and I didn't believe you either. But remembered all that and named all of us and asked for where so-and-so is from all that time. And I always figured that the student that gave you the most trouble to the teacher, you never forgot their name, or, was a bugger like us, and they remember your name.
Well, that's probably true. The memorable ones.
Yeah.
For good reasons or not so good.
Yeah. It was kind of for a boy to grow up there. Was very good. We all learned how to skate as young guys, and we were good skaters, and that's why some of our hockey players that came were good, because they were there all the time. Then we, the McIntyre River, we swam. Go down where the Seaway Terminal is, all that was they had for, when I first came, 1939 there, they had the sand suckers in the harbor, and suck the sand and pump up the big pipes to where the Seaway Terminal sits now and all that. Yeah. And then that flow, the sand would settle, and then the Neebing and the McIntyre River, the water would flow out and out. And that they did that for, they had these big dredges with big iron augers.
They were dredging these rivers.
Yeah, to get the harbor dredged out. You
sure.
Know? And you were... You played on it. It was like a desert for some years, that soil. And if you wanted to hit a golf ball, you could find it. You know, everything. It was like a Sahara Desert.
Well, no greens there.
Yeah, there was no kid had a chance like that to swim in a river down there and skate in the winter. A lot of the kids. I came from Finlayson Street previous to that. You didn't do that, because there was just no opportunity. Yeah. And so for us, building a shack in the bush there,
yeah,
and a clubhouse, well, you learned a little carpentry, and that.
Sure, yeah.
And so that part my life, to this day, when we talk about those old memories, they were good memories.
Happy memories.
Yeah.
You mentioned the CPR elevators along the Cam.
Yeah.
How long did they last? They were still there in the 40s?
Yeah. They started, the elevator D came on the curve of the Cam towards Patterson's, because International Harvester was this side of it. That if you go up the Jackknife, and that was big time, because all the farming equipment was brought in by package freighter, unloaded place. It was, and then from there it was on rail to Manitoba and Saskatchewan.
Sure.
That, especially during the war years and that.
And did Messy Harris and maybe John Deere do the same thing, or was it primarily International Harvester?
It was international. John Deere and those others were small. They brought stuff from the east by rail.
Oh, rail
and
all the
it
way.
Was, we had a shop, they'd have an equivalent of a service station.
Yeah.
Small.
Yes, go ahead.
John Deere was very small. They were right where Mario right. Bowling Alley is. Yes. On,
when you mentioned that Mr. Andrews had the, was the person who owned the business? No, that was the other business. John Andrews owned the other business.
Northland Machinery.
Yeah, which became?
It's still, I think it folded.
Yeah, it's still there, right.
Yeah.
The predecessor to Vulcan is what I was thinking of. Twin City?
Okay, yeah, Twin City was started. Now, it's got an interesting history. They had a bunch of Air Force guys and a few Army guys. They were putting some money in it, and they were running it like the Army. And finally, we had the owner. The other guys got forced out and ended up two owners. There was one guy, Art Gowan, and Colonel Johnson. Now, Colonel Johnson was the brother of Eddie Johnson, who owned the Pigeon Timber Company, which was then a big company.
Indeed.
Sawmill and the whole nine yards. Well, this colonel, I used to go noon to the counter at lunchtime and look at the magazines, and some of it is from West Point cadets when he was. Yeah. I'd look at them, you know. And this guy, he was manager of Marathon Papers. And, of course, he was an officer, an American officer, but now he was in the Canadian Army, and he wanted to be released from his responsibility in Marathon. But Marathon was American-owned then, I think.
American kid.
And he went over during the war thing, and he was personal aide to Lord Mountbatten. A colonel is an aide to the general type of thing. So when I saw this picture, you remember that Yalta thing that all the ships were down at Canada there? It was Roosevelt and Stalin and even
Churchill. Yeah, the group portrait of them.
De Gaulle, I think, was, and that. Well, if you'd seen the pictures of the Lord Mountbatten, well, Colonel Johnson, their aide, and all the generals that were there were aides, and he was one of them. They're standing, you know. So he was like a man's man for us guys.
Sure.
And he ran it like an army, but he still was a type of guy. We invented a lot of stuff to improve the international equipment. The guys that fabricators of the diesel or the iron, the welding, innovated, redone some of it so it'll stand better, all that. And he was really proud of us for that, you know. That was... And the International Harvester guys, they'd come to us here, this dealership, to learn and take pictures of everything.
Yeah.
And then a year or two later on the production line, that improvement would come on, you know, stuff. So
were you selling much equipment here at the Lakehead, or was it, because International Harvester is, I think, a farm machinery for the prairies.
We were the construction equipment.
Okay.
The farm dealership was Coslett's on Syndicate Avenue, and then they took Coslett's into our shop. So we had the farm machinery in the back,
but yours was the.
And the stuff in the Cam River, the outfit, that was a separate Hamilton. Our stuff came from Chicago. Theirs came from Hamilton. And it went west.
Sure.
You know, so.
Yes, I can understand that.
So at that time, there was a lot of activity on the water and a lot of activity on the rail.
Imagine. Well, is there anything else? Some of these things in terms of changes in the job and the trade, the grain trade, well, you don't have very much in the way of experience of that or challenges. I think you've told us about some of the challenges you faced on the job and some vivid memories as well. Are there any questions about your work in connection with the grain movement through the city that I might have asked that come to mind?
I had nothing to do. Like Simpson Street, a couple of guys had small feed stores, you know, and bought bags so for chicken, you know, feeding and that. I was never involved with that. You know, it was just another store for us.
As far as you were concerned.
And,
Any question come to mind for you, Owen? Right. Well, you've given us some interesting insight, particularly into the 4748, and walked us around and swum us around elevators. I think that's useful and interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Peter, for giving us some time this Friday afternoon.
Okay, well, this, I kind of brought up old memories that I even had to go back and...
A walk down memory lane is kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.